Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Uncultured Universe. We are the podcast where two friends show each other movies, shows, and anything else that they need to see, hear, or experience in order to get a little more cultured. I'm your host, Joe, and I'm joined, as always, by the uncultured Justin.
Hey, it feels good to be back.
Feels good to be back. Today, we will be just trying to make some gosh dang money without marrying a man and maybe learning a little bit more about sisterhood along the way. It's 1994's Little Women.
This movie is a Christmas movie.
It's 100% a Christmas movie. There's many versions of this story that have been put to film.
Yeah.
And I dare say this one's the most Christmassy of the lot.
I mean, this one, it opens with a Christmas scene, right? And it comes back.
Yeah,
it comes back around a couple times. A Christmas or two shows up throughout the duration.
Lots of passage of time, lots of seasons in this movie. But I think the 1994 Little Women was marketed as a Christmas movie. It was released in December. So it's very fitting that we are revisiting this in December of 2024, 30 years later.
Oh my God. This movie is 30 years old. Holy shit. So that's the magic of doing a period piece. It doesn't feel 30 years like it doesn't feel like an old movie other than it features really young versions of these actors that we've grown up with.
Yeah. It's got a very 90s cast while obviously taking place in like the 1860s.
It's definitely not a feel it's a feel movie. It's not a feel good, it's not a feel bad movie. It's a deep movie.
It's a movie in terms of like 90s movies of the time. Well, I guess maybe late 80s and 90s movies of the time. This movie exists in the same arena as like something like Steel Magnolias or A League of Their Own. These very like female ensemble movies that are like hugely emotional and about like the woman's experience that I kind of grew up on.
That's a wonderful thing to be exposed to at a young age. Like, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about this movie. There's so many good nuggets to pull out of this. But I think that's what makes you such a well-rounded person is that you have this
totally
unique, view given at an early impressionable age of, you know, like all of those three movies that you gave, Steel Magnolias, this one, and League of Their Own. Like, obviously, yes, heavy female lead, talking about the issues of the times, talking about things that people don't normally talk about, and it's vitally important.
Yeah, I mean, this story was one of the first, but before we get into it, let's kind of talk through, Justin, what did you do? What'd you watch in our unannounced month long hiatus from UCU?
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. So those who've been keeping track, this is the first episode we've done since
October.
September, October.
Yeah.
Yeah. What have I been watching?
Yeah, yeah. What have you been doing?
We've been watching a lot of True Blood. Going back really? And watching True Blood. Oh, hell yeah.
Which season are you on?
We're on season 5, I think. Ryan read all the books. She okay. blasted through all the books. There's 13 books.
Oh my God.
Which is wild. And like the first season kind of lines up with the first book. And then after that, the show just kind of goes into its own idea
I can imagine. Yeah.
Cause at the end of each episode, I just turned to Ryan and she's like, that what the hell is that? They're just making shit up now. It's like, yeah, they're just, does that happen in the books? Absolutely not. Of course not. That's what we've been
watching. Would you say the show's good, or is it kind of just like, does it fall off after the first season? I've never really watched it.
The show's kind of just like a silly, campy soap opera where just everybody's hot and it's just over the top, ridiculous, supernatural, crazy stuff. And there's a lot of sex and there's a lot of blood and gore. And it's a fun time. It's a fun time.
Louisiana.
Louisiana is
I could realize
the third main character. Yeah. what have you been watching? I haven't been to the theater in several months. What have since we watched The Substance in September before we left?
Oh wow, that's been a while. Yeah, in our hiatus, I moved to a different state. I have been sick for like a month and a half, which is why my voice may sound a little raspy and sexy on this episode.
Yeah.
And I did get the chance to watch a few movies. I watched Conclave. That was fun. If you want like a kind of a Gossip Girl meets Catholic Church, good time.
Ooh.
I watched Wicked, which was also fun, but I don't know if it deserves all of like the
hype. Yeah.
The hype it's getting. I don't really get all that. And I wanted to cover this. I watched Gladiator 2, which is the sequel to our unofficial first episode.
That's right.
That's right. Uncultured Universe. I think it's just a very different movie than Gladiator 1.
Sure.
It's not really, it's not as good. I'll say that it's
fine.
The plot is not as sharp. It's doing a lot of different things. There's some individual parts that are good, but other than that, I don't know. You can reiterate it.
That's the trouble with legacy sequels is that they don't have the same amount of panache or whatever, and it just seems like a cash grab a lot of the times. That's unfortunate.
It's a lot of pieces. It's a lot of like rehashing things that happened in the first one, using the same lines as the first one. But other than that, there's not a whole lot to it. That's fun. Let me give you some stats, around the film that we're talking about today. So yeah. Little Women is a movie that I have seen and you have now seen because I have forced you to. The 1994 version of Little Women, directed by Gillian Armstrong, is what we're talking about today. Based on the 1868 novel by Louisa May Alcott. Ever heard of her?
No.
Starring Winona Ryder, Gabriel Byrne, Trini Alvarado, Samantha Mathis, Kirsten Dunst, Claire Danes, Christian Bale, Eric Stoltz, Mary Wicks, and Susan Sarandon.
What a cast.
What a cast. I think this was my first Sarandon, by the way.
Sarandon watch. Back.
Yeah. It was released in December of 1994. It made $95 million against a budget of 18. So not
wow. Wow.
And it received 3 Oscar nominations for Best Original Score, Best Costume Design, and Best Actress for Winona.
Good for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She did it. She did a pretty good job. I'll get more into it as we dive a little deeper, but that's pretty common, right? With period pieces, you get a costume nod.
Yeah. Yeah. So the 2019 version that was directed by Greta Gerwig, I want to talk a little bit more about that later, but that one actually won the costume Oscar. Ooh. I think. Yeah. So especially this particular area, you get a lot of like corsets, you get a lot of piece suits. There's just a lot of eye candy to be had. It all looks very good. I think this movie looks very good. I think this movie sounds very good. I want to get into like, it feels like they just like shoved a microphone in the middle of every single conversation happening in this movie. And you can just hear the every last like ruffle. I think it on the whole really contributes to that costume nomination. They're the garments that people are wearing in this story contribute to the story itself.
Totally. Anyway. Absolutely. Yeah. There's some good visual storytelling going on with the evolution of style and facial hair and things like that. Yes. Which definitely telegraphs more than it shows, which is pretty cool. But yeah, what else you got? You got more?
We were going to change up the structure a little bit here. Let's get into what we're calling the icebreaker. I'm going to make you play a little game to get us into the flow of things, and then we'll talk through some more thoughts and themes.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, Justin, welcome to the icebreaker for 1994's Little Women. I'm calling it Little Women, Big Careers. We talked about how this cast is pretty stacked, and I did look into a few of the details there, and a lot of the titular Little Women, and I'm including Sarandon in that as well, went on to have like pretty big careers in Hollywood. I wanted to give you a little quiz around what these actresses have as part of their resumes. Okay. So I'm just going to give you, I think I have 12 questions here.
Ooh.
The answers are going to be either Winona Ryder, Trini Alvarado, that's the actress who plays Meg, the oldest sister. Samantha Mathis, who plays the older version of Amy.
Yep.
Dunst, who plays the younger version. Claire Danes, who plays Beth. And Susan Sarandon, who plays Marmee. Okay, so those are your possible answers.
Okay, one of six. Got it.
Yeah, I got 12 questions, so do the math there.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, so starting at number one, which Little Women starred in the movie The Frighteners?
The Frighteners. Oh.
Peter Jackson's movie.
Was that also Michael J. Fox?
Yeah.
The Frighteners? Oh, man. That had to have been Trini Alvarez or Alvarado. Trini
Alvarado. That is correct.
Yeah.
You got it.
Alvarez. Okay. What the fuck?
Which Little Women won an Oscar for her role as a Catholic nun in Dead Man Walking?
Dead Man Walking. That was I Am Sam Man.
It was.
Yeah.
Sean Penn.
Sean Penn. Dead Man Walking. That was Susan Sarandon.
It was Sarandon.
Yeah.
Okay. Number three. Which Little Woman voiced Miss Spider in James and the Giant Peach?
That was Winona, right?
No.
Oh. It's the older version of Amy.
No.
Is it Dunst?
No.
Is it Alvarado again?
No.
Who am I missing? Oh, Claire Danes? Oh, it was Claire Danes. Of course it was.
It's not.
Oh. Well, shit. Who was it?
It's Susan Sarandon again. I gave you a little trick question there.
Oh, Sarandon back to back.
Yeah, yeah. I knew that would trip you up.
It did.
Okay. Number four. Who voiced Krista in Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest? Which Little Woman?
Oh, that's what's her face from it. That's the older Amy.
That is the older Amy. It's Samantha Mathis.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice. Which Little Woman won two acting Emmys for portraying a CIA officer on Homeland?
Oh, Claire Danes.
Easy peasy. Claire Danes. Okay. Which Little Woman has played Spock's mother on Star Trek?
That was Winona. Yeah,
that was Winona. I was going to try to trip you up by thinking of the TV show, but you got it. Okay. Which Little Women has played a comic book character in a movie trilogy?
No. Comic book character in a movie trilogy. Is it? What? No.
I'm being tricky here.
You're being so tricky. Comic book movie, triplet. It's not Susan Sarandon, obviously.
They are a comic book character, but they're not a superhero.
Yeah. It's not Winona. It's not Sarandon. Trini Alvarado, I've said her a bunch already. She's already got her two.
She has not already got her two.
Oh, she hasn't? Okay, well then it's her.
It's not.
Is it Claire? No. Is it, who is it? Is it Meg? It's Meg.
Come on, keep going. Keep going. Think through it.
shit. is not Claire Danes. Is it Claire Danes? Is my brain completely rotted?
I think it is. You want me to give it to you?
Yeah, give it to me.
It's Kirsten Dunst in Spider-Man.
Oh, God, of course Kirsten Dunst.
Duh.
I'm only picturing her as a 9-year-old child from this movie.
I know, I was tricking you. Okay. Which little woman is the only actress on this list to star in two movies that we have covered on this podcast?
Claire Danes.
Which two movies?
Romeo and Juliet.
And? Okay, oh, this one doesn't count.
Did you say besides this one?
Besides this one.
Okay, so...
It is Claire Danes, but which two movies?
Romeo and Julieta. And shit, what else was she in that we've covered? Chicken Run. No, and no. I'm Claire Danes.
It's just her, like, not even stop motion.
Yeah.
Okay, what were we covering, I think, this time last year?
Christmas movies. Oh, was she in The Family Stone?
She's in The Family Stone. She plays the sister who comes in. Sarah Jessica Parker's sister, Claire Danes.
I forgot she was in that movie. I'm only picturing Sarah Jessica Parker and Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, Claire Danes comes in and she has like blonde hair and she's the one who falls in love with who Sarah Jessica Parker is initially with.
Barf. Yeah. Yep, that's right.
She falls off the bus.
That's right. She ruins everything.
No, she doesn't. Okay. Which little woman is credited in a movie as the dying swan?
Oh, that's Winona Ryder. That's another movie that we covered. That was Black Swan.
Yeah. Nice. You got that one quick. Okay. Which little woman starred in the 1980 movie Times Square, which also starred Tim Curry?
Times Square?
I hadn't heard of this. I did just like Google it for this game.
Trini Alvarado.
It is Trini Alvarado. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Which two little women played the younger versions of characters in the movie How to Make an American Quilt?
What the fuck movie is that?
It's a movie from the 90s.
Okay. Ooh, big hint. Younger versions of characters. So Kirsten Dunst, she was young in that era.
No.
Winona?
No. Winona was in the movie, but she was like the main character in the movie. So I'm tricking you again.
She's not an answer. Whoa. Two other actors from this movie were in another movie with Winona. And
there's like an insane crossover. Yeah.
Incredible. Susan Sarandon.
No.
No. One of the other five.
Yes.
Yeah, I knew it.
It is Claire Danes and Samantha Mathis.
Yep.
Yeah. You knew it.
I knew it.
Okay. Last question. Which little woman voiced the younger version of an animated character that was primarily voiced by Meg Ryan?
It's what's her face? It's Kirsten Dunst.
Yes, do you know the movie?
I don't.
It's Anastasia.
Anastasia.
She was the young Anastasia.
Wow.
Anastasia.
How fun.
So fun. Okay. Well, you did all right, but I think the ice is broken.
The ice has been broken. Yeah, it's been broken. Cool. Yeah, let's jump into some like surface level thoughts and prayers here. So, Joe, I took a lot away from this movie.
Uh-huh.
And I can't wait to talk about it.
So how much did you know like about the story itself before watching Little Women? Because it's been adapted so many times. It's kind of a classic piece of literature.
So many times? I only know of the two versions of the movie.
Yeah, there's like three other versions of the movie from like the 50s and before.
It's been like a play / musical on Broadway. Like it's
a musical. Oh my god!
TV adaptations,
made for TV movies. Yeah,
the book itself is in two volumes. I think split between like before the 4-year time jump and after, and then it has like two sequels about the school that they set up. So it's part of a whole franchise.
Wonderful. Ryan read the book earlier this summer or late some point in the past year or two. She's read it.
Really?
Yeah. So when we were watching it and as soon as it was done, she was like, yeah, that was a really great adaptation. They hit all the major things. I don't see any glaring omissions or anything, taken creative liberty with. She thought it was a really great, one-to-one. Mm-hmm. Although she said in the book, Joe is way more insufferable than she is in the movie.
Yeah.
Of just being completely over it and helpless and all this kind of stuff. So I didn't know too much going into this. The only thing, and this is another culture touch point, is do you remember that episode of Friends where Joey and Rachel switch books?
Yep.
That was my only touch point to this. It was just like, oh, Joey doesn't want to read this book because it makes him sad and he puts it in the freezer.
We were talking about that earlier today, the Friends joke where she's like, they're going back and forth, like spoiling things about the book. And then she's like, Beth dies. And then he's like, what?
And then at the end, he's like, Beth is really sick. She's like, want to put the book in the freezer now? Yeah. So
he puts the book in the freezer with like Cujo
with The Shining, which is a book I've read. So I thought that was really fun. And so that's all I knew from it. And the whole time throughout the movie, I'm like, okay, they all have like these generic four letter names. And I was like, I can't remember what name they say. I couldn't remember the quote from Friends. And I was like,
oh, you didn't know which one died?
I was like, one of you is dying. And so I was like, oh, is this when this person gets sick and dies? Or is this one when this person gets sick and dies or whatever? So like when Amy, as Kirsten Dunst, falls into the lake, frozen lake, I was like, oh, this is it. She's going to get pneumonia and she's going to die.
Oh my God.
But she gets better. And I was like, oh, well then who dies next? And then it's the next scene where Claire Danes goes and brings a fucking cooked potato to the Hassel Dusseldorf's.
Fucking Hummels killing Beth.
Yeah. With their scarlet fever.
God.
But she hangs on for 4 years, just deathly ill.
I know. This is Claire Danes' first movie role, which is kind of crazy.
Oh, wow.
I love her in this. I think that she kills it. And I also think it's so funny how like close to death they make her appear in like the later years. She's she's on a chaise lounge with like the biggest circles under her eyes.
Oh yeah. And she just looks terrible. Yeah. They did a great job.
She's constantly holding hands with like the Grim Reaper in this movie. It's so fun.
I know. And it's sad. So like it's a sad scene, obviously, and
it is very sad.
It is remarkable that this is her first. Well, wait, did she do this first and then do My So-Called Life?
I think maybe around the same time. This was 94. So when was My So-Called Life?
I think 92 or 93.
Okay. She may have like jumped from that to here as her first jumping off point. But to me, this is like the birth of the Claire Danes crying face that she uses so well in so many of her roles.
And because like the following year, she does Baz Luhrmann's, or 2 years later, does Romeo and Juliet, and just is also a powerhouse there. So that's really impressive that's her, one of her early acting, check marks. And it's just, it's a powerful performance, even though she's just there to be sick and die.
She's a chameleon. Love Claire.
So that's all I knew about the movie going in. Mm-hmm. Before we were watching it, Ryan was like, it's a heavy movie. It's not lighthearted. And it's, I was like, okay, I'm prepared for this. Thank you, Joe. but I thought, on the surface, I thought it was a really good movie, really well done. It's a neat kind of coming of age tale. The time jump is interesting for a number of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It feels strange. I can't remember why else there would need to be a 4-year time jump other than just to age up Amy and to move that story along so Lori can come back into the family and he can do that whole thing. And
yeah, I want to say it corresponds to the two different volumes that were published for the original book. Like one was published 1 year and then the next volume was published a year later. I think that is the time jump. And it also, it's like a broader theme of the movie. It's about these girls moving from some like childhood years into womanhood years and what that means for mm-hmm. each of them and what that means for like women at the time.
True.
And so like it, the whole entire movie is about them preparing for that world and then entering that world. And so you have these like two very distinct stages that you're kind of jumping in between. And it's about how these women decide to make that jump or decide to like not make that jump in certain ways.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was an interesting kind of thing. I liked the first half better. I liked them all, obviously. Mm-hmm. I liked them all being together and, you know, playing around in their little play area, pretending and having their mm-hmm. fake newspaper and, you know, playing around with Lori and being silly. Mm-hmm. And then the second half felt really jarring. And I guess it's supposed to, right? Because they're all mm-hmm. growing up. Meg's married or getting married to Eric Stoltz, and it feels weird because he's just a lump of a man, right? He's boring, right? And that's Joe's whole thing. Like,
I had a note that Eric Stoltz is the biggest dweeb in this movie, but then I eventually had a note that like Daddy Stoltz may be a little hot towards the end. I don't know. I'm still thinking through it.
Papa Stoltz, yeah.
Papa
Stoltz holding twins is cute. Yeah, and I guess that's part of it, right? And then it's ultimately, obviously, it's Jo's story. It's her journey. I feel like Amy gets kind of the shaft as well as Beth.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just the story of these characters. Like Beth is a homebody. She wants to be, she likes to be home. She has no aspirations or wants to move and do all this kind of stuff. And then unfortunately she gets scarlet fever and just has to be homebound.
Mm-hmm.
Amy, young Amy, is an insufferable little nit throughout the house, kind of a thing, youngest child syndrome sort of thing. And then like 4 years later, she has a gift for painting and she goes to Paris and then she comes back married to Lori, which is really weird.
Yeah, I think at this point we're in 2024 right now, you kind of can't talk about this movie without talking about it in comparison with the 2019 Greta Gerwig version. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up on this 1994 version for so long, but I kind of had like a child's like perspective on it. I loved like the craft of the movie. I loved the way it looked and sounded. I loved the music in this movie, the score by Thomas Newman. I listen to it all the time. And I didn't really fully understand like the overall themes or plot points as much. And then the 2019 version comes around and it really starts playing with a lot of those things that you're talking about in like some really interesting ways. And so,
yeah,
like
I want to dive into that. Is that part of your main discussion that you want to talk about?
It can get into it. What additional like thoughts and prayers do you have here?
Yeah. I wish, when I asked and mentioned it to Ryan, she's like, yeah, that's how it is in the book. I wish Friedrich wasn't so fucking old. I wish he wasn't 80 years old making out with a 20-year-old.
I guess that's like a surface level thing that I have too, is like I bet it is always very hard to create a new version of like film a new version of Little Women, because you're always going to have weird age things. They always have to deal with the age of Amy. That's a thing that the 2019 version does differently than the 1994 version. They always have to deal with like Friedrich being older. He's supposed to be like a professor. He does look like he's 50 in this one, so it's kind of weird.
I did not like that, and I was like, I really don't like that. And I asked Ryan, I was like, is that how it is in the book? Is he described as being old as dirt, as old as her dad? And it's just like, yeah.
I mean, the movie kind of asks you to like suspend disbelief in a way with some of these time jumps. And I kind of rather they do that and keep the cast instead of having like younger versions of the characters that were not necessary, that like we lose connection to compared to like the older versions, you know.
I was so disconnected from they do the four years later, and then they're doing the dance around the thing, and they showed just this random ass person.
You're like, who is that?
I was like, who's this tiny lady? And then but as like she comes across the screen, the voiceover says something about like, and Amy, and it's just like, oh, is that supposed to be Amy? That woman, that's a 20-year-old woman.
It's nothing against Samantha Mathis, but it is kind of the ultimate failing of this movie. It's like the Amy time jump. You just like you lose all just momentum there.
I lose all of it because I'm like, okay, so first of all, how old are they all supposed to be, these little women?
I would say in the first like section of the movie, it's like,
okay, so Meg is the oldest.
Meg is probably like 17, 18. Joe's probably like 16. Beth is like 14. And then Amy's like 12. And so you add 4 years onto that. Ugh. And then I think the last half of the movie takes like a year or a year and a half. So at the end, Amy's maybe like
maybe 17,
like 17 or 18, yeah,
pushing 18. And Lori's got to be the same age as Joe or Meg, of like,
yeah, he's probably 20. Like 21 towards the end. Yeah.
Oof. Yeah, that's rough. That took me out of it. So I was real curious about that. I was like, how old are they actually supposed to be? Because you know, you have, you know, Claire Danes and Winona Ryder, who are just kind of like, they stayed looking the same age throughout the 80s and 90s, kind of thing. So it was hard to kind of tell, just like, are they supposed to be in their teens? Or are they supposed to be in their early 20s? Can't tell, hard to tell. So that took me out. So I was just really curious about that. And then another thing that I loved was the storytelling that I mentioned earlier, of Lori going through his thing of like, I'm moving to Europe, so now I'm a dastardly man, and I'm upset about my rejection of my proposal, so I'm going to have a Van Dyke.
Lori's such a funny character, I realized on this viewing. Is like, you think he's going to be the main love interest. He's not. He kind of becomes sort of like a buffoon towards the end, but then he redeems himself a little bit. It's basically like, he's like a fuckboy, but he just wants to be part of their family so bad. So he's like no fuckboy you've ever heard of. He just like wants to marry a March no matter how hard. And none of them really are into it.
I thought it was so strange. I was just like, what is this? What is his angle here?
He loves the family. They're his best friends. And he's also just like aimless in his own life. And so his story is about like finding his own purpose as a man and kind of making himself worthy to be a part of that family.
And in 2019, this is Chalamet.
Chalamet.
Does he also come back from Europe with a Van Dyke and a shitty mustache and just looking like a prick?
Yeah, I think he's got like a little mustache in all of them. Yeah. He it's always like they mention like billiards as his main vice, which I guess is like he plays pool too much, or maybe he bets on pool. I don't really know what that means.
I don't either. We should look that up and see what that colloquialism means. Just like,
it's just like he's spending money on billiards.
Like, is he buying billiards equipment? That's a problem. Where are you going to put it all, Lori?
His main problem this whole time is that he's been collecting pool tables. They're like, stop.
Stop it. Where are we going to put them all?
You got to stop.
You have to stop spending all of my money on pool tables. That's hilarious.
Okay, some more just like high level things that I noticed this time around. I never really noticed that like the reason the marches are like considered poor while still being kind of a part of the upper class of that town is like they're transcendentalists. So their parents are kind of like the hippies of the time.
Yeah. I loved that aspect about it.
Yeah.
Susan Sarandon is fucking marmy. Yeah. Slinging some great one-liners talking about, you know, like independence and,
yeah,
you know, I value your mind. I would rather like just spitting all these great things. Marmy is like 200 years in the future speaking, yeah, about, you know, women's rights and all this kind of stuff, allowing and, you know, encouraging her daughters to grow up in such a way, like is so awesome.
I love the theme of like, obviously the marches are trying to like raise their daughters as just like self-reliant humans instead of women, while also being like realistic about certain aspects of the world, like especially when Meg is asking Marmy about getting married to John the tutor, and she's like, so you don't really mind that he's poor or whatever, and Susan Sarandon's like, well, I wish he had a house.
It'd be great if he had a house and everything, but like, fine. Yeah.
They have to strike up it. This movie is all about striking a balance between like what should be and what is, especially in that time of like great change. Like you're in the Civil War and then you're slowly getting out of the Civil War. There's a lot of like societal stuff happening. And so as these women are going through changes in their own lives, it's like society is also changing around them and they're figuring out like how do they best fit in that.
Yeah, I was curious about like, I was like, what war are they talking about? And I was trying to take context clues. Civil War. Yeah, and I was like, this isn't like the War of 1812, this isn't, yeah, World War One or anything. I was like, okay, it's Civil War, that makes sense. And then yeah, they're talking about the rebels and all this kind of stuff later when Papa comes back. Which again, he is also 80 years old, which,
yeah,
Which is wild.
The aging is fun. That's also a fun moment in the 2019 version. Is like he's such like a cameo character that he really just appears in like what, like that one scene, and then he's kind of around later when Beth dies.
He's just there.
But in the 2019 version, it's Bob Odenkirk, so Better Call Saul, and he just amazing. Kind of like walks in that Christmas scene, and the entire theater just explodes because no one knew like what was happening.
Who's going
like,
to be why. The dad? Yeah.
It's like the Bob Odenkirk cameo in Little Women has become like infamous.
That's so fun. I love that. Good for him. Yeah. So which obviously you grew up on this version. So I take it you prefer this one to the 2019.
Well, yes. On like, it's really interesting on an emotional level. I think this one is a lot more straightforward. It's a lot more of like a straightforward narrative in a way, so things are like told in order. The 2019 version does some weird stuff with like the timeline that is interesting. I've grown to appreciate the 2019 version more, even though I was like kind of like taken aback by all of it when I first saw it.
Sure.
But this 1994 version is such like a comfort watch for me. Again, like you just kind of, you sink into the script, you sink into the visuals. I love the way the movie isn't afraid to slow down in certain areas. The camera's not afraid to just like linger on these characters. There's pauses in the conversation, and like the mic does feel like it's really pressed up against these people's faces. You hear kind of like every breath in the movie.
Shuffle on the floor, the shuffling of papers, the tactile feel of that. I dug
tactile.
That too.
That's the perfect word. Yeah.
It feels like a perfect, you know, like stage play adaptation kind of a thing. Cause that's what it is. It just takes place at, what is it? Orchard House or whatever.
Orchard House. Yeah.
It mostly takes place there and a couple other main spots, but the house is a character in and of itself. Right. It translates to, you know, just a stage play. And that's what you would hear. You would hear the shuffling of the feet and all that kind of stuff. So,
Yeah. And like, I grew up with four sisters. I'm not saying there's like a one-to-one. Each sister was one of the little women.
Oh, man. I was going to ask you, who's who?
No, not at all. Not at all. They're all combinations. We're all combinations of the Little Women. This isn't Sex and the City.
Is it not?
Growing up, like this is one of the movies that we just like would quote in the household and stuff. I love how many like weird, funny one-liners there are in this movie. There's the moment where Joe chops all her hair off, and then you just hear Amy in the background going like, You're one beauty.
Like, Amy, you
so funny.
Amy, you little shit.
Yeah. The script is smart and kind of biting. I love the uber dramatic moments, like Beth dying. I think that's a beautiful scene where you see kind of like what is indicated to just be like her soul leaving out the window in the form of wind, and then you turn around. I think it's a great scene between Winona Ryder and Claire Danes. I think the part where Amy burns Joe's manuscript is played like such a thriller. I love
that.
Oh
yeah. Part. Yeah. Apparently in the book, Ryan was saying that like their fight lasts way longer than like a couple minutes or whatever. Like it gets dire, you know, of just like Joe straight up ignoring Amy throughout the house and just like,
yeah,
which I get. That makes sense.
That was one thing that I noticed. I thought that it lasted longer than it actually does in this movie, but it's really like they have that fight, and then the very next scene is them going ice skating, and Amy falls through the ice, and then they save her, and it's all forgiven. So I guess the movie is really told in like chapters that probably correspond to chapters in the book itself, and you can kind of see like from scene to scene, okay, this is the beginning of this part, this is the end of this part.
Yeah, for pacing, you know, you can't just keep showing them in the house, shuffling around, doing whatever over and over again while, you know, Joe's trying to ignore Amy the whole time. It made sense. But the death scene, the Beth death scene was a good standout. I think watching them go tit for tat, Winona and Claire Danes acting against each other. Mm-hmm. I feel like Claire Danes, you know, just comes out swinging, and just boxing above her weight class there. Masterful.
It's kind of insane. Yeah.
And not to disparage Winona's performance or anything like that, but I don't quite feel that she's matching the emotional heaviness of Claire Danes' output. And maybe that's editing, maybe that's kind of stuff, because it's two cameras, they're going to one, they're switching back and forth. I feel like you probably could have gotten a maybe more genuine reaction out of both of them if they were in the same, you know, in the same frame. Because whenever they cut back over to Winona, that kind of took me out of it just a little bit. And maybe that's kind of also visual storytelling a little bit too, to kind of just distance yourself and to make way for the scene where she hears the noise in the window and she's like, oh shit, I better go close the window. And I'm like, don't you get up, girl. Cause as soon as you come back, you know, she ain't going to be there. And I think she knew it. I think she knew it too. But, that's my only kind of thing with that scene.
Yeah. I think it's a beautiful scene. I think you're right. I think they're both doing different styles of acting, and I think Claire Danes' like face is obviously a lot more showing of like the emotion in that case, and I think that's where the music really kind of takes me away.
Get you there.
It going from that scene into the next, where it really just slows down. It becomes kind of like a single piano as they're like preparing the house and the rooms for like the whatever funeral service they're happening.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. I love the score of this movie. How it can a similar theme goes through that music versus like the really joyous and upbeat like orchard house theme, which you hear at like the beginning and end of the movie.
Yeah.
And so I think the music is really what is taking me from scene to scene in this one.
Yeah, I wish I would have paid more attention to that aspect. Admittedly, that's kind of a thing that I do on subsequent rewatches of movies, I'll pick up more on the score stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and pay more attention to that next time.
Yeah, Thomas Newman, he loves an oboe. Mm.
Ooh, I mean, it's fitting for the time. Thomas Newman, he did another movie that we've covered. Can't recall.
Movies that we've covered.
Because I remember making a joke about Randy Newman and their cousins.
He's done stuff like Finding
Nemo. Oh, he fucking did. He did 1917.
He did 1917. Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, there it is. We got there.
And you get kind of like the same vibe. It's like this very kind of like melancholy, beautiful score, while also it can come into like a crescendo as well.
Yeah, yeah, a heaping climax. Speaking of heaping climax, let's jump to this main course and give me some of your musings. Your
chow down.
I want to chow.
Okay.
Delightful.
Getting into the main course. So Little Women has been adapted many times and it's probably been like analyzed to death. I think it's pretty easy to say that this movie is about sisterhood and its themes of sisterhood and like what it means to be a woman in a given time apply beyond its years, if that makes sense. Like it's not just about being a woman in the 1860s, although that is literally what it's about.
Yeah, which is wild. Like almost 200 years later, these themes still resonate, and it's a sad thing, but it's also kind of like a cool thing that it's endearing. It's endured, but like. Like I'm excited to show this to Jeannie when the time comes of just like,
yeah.
And also read the book too. Like read this book and watch this movie and, you know, heed the message and all that. So like, it's so cool.
I was kind of interested. I wanted to do some digging, but I wasn't able to get to it around like why you see so many like quartets of women in just like stories and pop culture like this that are so women focused. So you get like, you obviously get this movie we talked about, like, oh, Sex in the City. Like which Sex in the City girl are you? You get like Girls in New York, right? Mm. And so I think you get these groups of four women so that you can portray like different ways that women approach different problems, different situations. And so In Little Women, it's all about how these sisters approach growing up and entering into the world in different ways. And so you have Marmee, who is working to like give them the best platform to leap off of however they can. You have Meg, the oldest, who is very... because she is the oldest, she's maybe the most ingrained into maybe the old way of things. And so she's trying to be the most traditional. She is the most concerned with like what the rest of society thinks about their family and trying to blend in with society as it is, instead of trying to like make ripples. And yet she has like a little bit of a revolution in her own way. She marries John, the tutor, the poor one. And so she finds kind of a resolution there, even though they're poor. She ends with like a more traditional marriage that is still full of love.
Yeah.
And then go down to Joe. Obviously, she is the more she's less inclined to be swayed by society at that time. She wants to fight back against it. She doesn't understand why they have to do the things that they have to do.
Love it.
She wants to maintain the relationships that she has. She's very flaky. She's so me. she doesn't I don't think she wants to grow up, but she also wants to like see the world. She wants to do everything, but she's bad at like committing. And so she's very much like subject to change as the story goes, and that's reflective of like society as a whole. Yada yada.
Yep.
Beth, sick, stays at home.
But also her story is about how she can find strength and fulfillment in doing that as well. And I like how, like, obviously it's super sad that she dies in the second half of the movie, but like she poses it as like, this is me doing something for the first time that you guys haven't done, you know?
That was a good line. That's a good, that was a good a thing of it. She's like, I'm always behind. I've always fallen behind, but now I'm the one who's going ahead of you guys. So like, peace.
And then, yeah. And then like the Amy character, it, so this is where it gets interesting. Cause like you watch the 1994 version and that was the version that like we grew up with. So you always think like, oh, the Amy character is either Kirsten Dunst, who's fun, but like super annoying, does the whole book burning thing. You kind of hate her, whatever. She's a kid. Or it's Samantha Mathis, who unfortunately is just like kind of nothing in this movie. Right.
Right. Yep.
And that's where the 2019 version really kind of makes the biggest change, I would say, is like it gives a lot more focus to the Amy character.
Yeah.
So much so that so Florence Pugh plays Amy in the 2019 version.
Aged up version?
No, that's the thing. She plays her in both versions of it. So in 2019, do you know the whole cast of that movie?
Well, no, all I knew was Timothy Chalamet.
Okay. So in 2019, Emma Watson, Hermione Granger, plays Meg, the oldest. Saoirse Ronan plays Joe. So you know Saoirse Ronan like Lady Bird.
Yeah.
Beth is played by Eliza Scanlon. I don't know if you saw like Sharp Objects or something like that. She's kind of like an Australian actress. Quieter, but like she also has like a really interesting role in that movie. And then Florence Pugh plays Amy as like a 12-year-old and then also as like a 17, 18, whatever age we're getting her in this. And it really asks you to suspend disbelief in the younger years because it's clearly like Florence Pugh playing a 12-year-old. Yeah. Once you can kind of like get past that, I think it really benefits from having that same actress from the younger to the older version. And it spends a lot more time in like the Paris scenes with her and Laurie. You get like 2 seconds of it. You get like one conversation of it in the 1994 version.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2019, she has this whole scene where she makes a monologue around like what it means to be a woman at that time and like why her wanting to marry for money is kind of like more than just her being like petulant or spoiled. It's more just like it is a financial choice for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like that is the prospect that she has. And so she's going to make that choice if she has to make a choice. Right.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't have any other options in that way. And so I think the 2019 version really kind of like made waves in that way in terms of like everyone's perception of this Amy character.
Right.
Because everyone's so used to like thinking Amy is this like petulant child. And then it's like, wait. Am I an Amy? Do we love Amy?
Am I Amy? So, I'm an Amy stan. Does Florence Pugh give the Florence Pugh sad face in this movie?
She does. She does that in Paris. They talk a lot more about how like Laurie was clearly like rejected by Joe and Florence Pugh as Amy like doesn't want basically Joe's sloppy seconds. She's like, no, fuck this. Like, I've always played second fiddle to Joe. Like, I'm not going to like accept your marriage proposal just because you can't have Joe.
Yeah.
They go through all of that. And then they still end up together.
Yeah. I always thought that was so weird. I was just like, well, why? And it seems so strange too, that like, as soon as Laurie gets the news that like Beth is dead, he's just like, well, I'm going to go make out with your younger sister.
Yeah.
And show her that I've changed. It's like, what the hell?
It happens way too fast in this version, but then in the later version, they kind of flesh it out more. And I think it really benefits from that.
Yeah, I think it would totally benefit from that. We talked about, you know, Sex and the City versus Little Women pipeline. Of course, you know, Sarah Jessica Parker is totally Joe. you know.
Oh, the writer, the main character.
The main character, absolutely. And then it gets kind of a little bit different. You know, Charlotte is probably Meg.
Okay, I can see it.
And then...
Miranda's Beth.
Yeah. And then Samantha is...
I guess Samantha's Amy.
Yeah.
That's probably the closest you'll get. The closest.
Yeah. But an even deeper one that I'm just now coming up with off the top of my head is the Ninja Turtles archetypes.
Oh my god.
To Little Women archetypes.
Connect them.
All right, so Leonardo, the leader, the stick in the mud, the narc, the rule follower, that's Meg.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I think Michelangelo, the fun-loving one with the heart of gold. I think that's Amy. And then, just wants to have fun. And I think kind of the badass of the group who's bucking the system, who, you know, can't sit still, wants to do all this stuff. And I think that's Raphael. I think that's Joe.
Raphael's Joe.
Yeah. And then
Donatello. You're going to make Donatello die of Scarlet Fever.
I am.
Just because he's the quiet one.
He's the quiet, pensive one. He loves machines and building stuff, you know, quietly by himself. And he's going to get Scarlet Fever and kick it.
There's probably like some scientific research to be had around like put any four individuals in a room for long enough. Maybe they will just like ultimately navigate to these poles just as a result of like, well, one of them's going to be talking over the other one. And the one that's quietest is a Beth. And then the one that wants to get out is an Amy or yada.
Oh, yeah. 100%. That's it. Surely there's a Harry Potter house equivalent for each of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Same
deal. Same
deal. And I think that's like a common trope of like four being like main characters within stuff. You know, you talked about, you know, Girls, the HBO show, and there's this. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe Toy Story characters, who knows? Ooh. There's all kinds of stuff you could draw parallels to throughout just general sweeping cinema and culture.
We need to make one of those grids.
We need to make the grid. Oh, you know what? We need to make the grids because then you can throw in the Seinfeld core cast there too.
Yep.
Oh man, that's so funny. that Jerry Seinfeld is Joe.
Jerry Seinfeld, Joe, Kramer, maybe
Amy.
Kramer's Amy.
George Costanza is Beth.
I don't think any of them are Beth. You may have to like assign.
They all kind of
have to double up.
Yeah, that's so.
It's funny. Like a show about what happens when you put four Joes in a room together.
Speaking of Joe, did you have fun growing up as a Joe? With a Joe main character lady, and especially with the quote of Joe, what a little name for such a person.
So this is Joe, like J-O, so it's right. Short for Josephine.
Yeah.
Whereas mine is J-O-E, so there wasn't a whole lot of connection happening there, but yeah, I mean, you feel drawn to Joe at the end of that. We all want to marry.
We all want to marry Joe. Everyone wants to marry Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fun.
Okay. Well, yeah. So we talked about the women. Is there
anything tiny.
Really? They're so tiny. How? What are they going to do? I think Sarandon's great in this.
Oh God, yeah.
I think she's got the face for it. You know how these days you have like movies where you have people who have like absolutely have a face that have seen an iPhone.
Yep, 100%.
I think this movie is good because it doesn't really suffer from that at all in any of its characters. Christian Bale is fun as the boy next door. I like how just like for a movie, for a book from the 1860s, it really subverts the romantic tropes in that way.
It does.
Joe classically does not end up with Laurie, even though they're kind of like star-crossed in that way. That's something else that the 2019 version like really expands on is like their big kind of conversation where Winona Ryder and Christian Bale are in the woods and he's like he kind of asks her to marry him without asking her to marry him.
Yeah.
She rejects him sadly it's a lot more hushed in the 1994 version. They're really close and they're almost kind of whispering to each other. Mm-hmm. And then in the 2019 version, it's Saoirse Ronan and Timothée Chalamet, and they're basically like screaming at each other on this hilltop. It's kind of amazing. They go through the same beats where he basically feels like they should be married because it feels like they should be married. Right. And so he's like, this is a natural next step. And then she just can't commit to something that she's not like 100% in, you know? Mm-hmm. And so she's like, this will be awful. Like we'd hate each other. We'd constantly fight and stuff. And so that's kind of like in the pinball machine of their lives, that kind of puts them both onto different paths.
Yeah.
Where like she goes off to New York, he goes off to Europe, and they both grow up in a way, and they never really come back together in the same way, but they both benefit from it in the end.
Yeah, they kind of have the when Harry met Sally conversation with each other, but they don't end up together, which I love that is such a neat subversion, and it's so cool that was written
in
1860 or whatever. Because like, what a neat choice, what a neat brave choice to make storytelling wise to like just really just fuck up your audience.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird and convenient that he does end up with Amy after that point, and I think Greta Gerwig like recognizes that and therefore like puts a little bit more resources into fleshing out that relationship
to make it feel earned, yeah,
to where it feels a little bit more natural. So you really appreciate that in the 2019 version, so that Laurie doesn't seem like such a psycho, which I did have as part of my notes.
He did kind of have scumbag energy.
But Laurie and Amy hate flirting in France, I had as a line item. Eric Stoltz, the biggest dweeb. Fucking Hummels killing Beth. Gabriel Byrne finds suffrage hot, and that's why he wins in the end. Did you have any more thoughts around just themes of Little Women? How
has your life changed now that it is part of your culture?
It's a powerful movie. The themes and the performances are great. And you know, like I said, I can't wait to show it to my daughter because it's a staple, and it's a strong, important piece, I think. And I had a good time with it. I was not expecting to have a good time. I was expecting to be like, oh, Bummersville. I was definitely not. And I think it's a great I'm interested in watching the 2019 version just for comparison, stark contrast notes.
I was gonna say we talk about like following up on so many of the movies that we've covered because they all have like sequels or remakes or follow-up movies in one way or another. This would be a really interesting watch to cover the 2019 version, or if you just want to like watch that in your own time, because it really shows how you can tell the same story, but the way that you film it and the way that you present the scenes can completely change it. So we talked about how like the 1994 version is very straightforward. One scene goes into the next. The 2019 version, it takes the first half and the second half and blends them together. So you'll be jumping in between timelines almost.
See, that's such a like modern cinema take on it. And I would love to have the notes of like early 90s cinema versus, you know, late aughts, early 20s cinema style of like what audiences are expecting in a movie. And that feels very modern storytelling of like blending story timelines and things like this and all that. So that'd be interesting to come back to. But ultimately I had a good time with this. I thought it was great. And I'm so glad we finally got it into the calendar to fit in around Christmas, because it is a Christmas movie. Or it has a wintry feel to it.
Yeah. So this has been on my list for a while. I have a list of movies that I know I want to cover as part of this podcast. This is one of them.
Yeah.
You're right. I am really glad. It's really fitting that we're covering it as December starts and we're getting into the Christmas season.
Yeah.
Because just like it or not, like this movie does have the vibe of a Christmas movie, even though only certain scenes are taking place on actual Christmas.
Yeah, definitely. But it feels like it. And that's the main message of just like, it's family and growing up and making your own future and all this kind of stuff. It's great. Mm-hmm. Great stuff. Joe, so on our way out here,
it just cut off your entire microphone.
Oh, did it? Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, I cut off your microphone too as I was trying to listen to you. Anyway, so what are we doing the rest of the year? We're just kind of fucking off, right?
We're fucking off. We're both going to have a real nice holiday season, as we hope our listeners do too. And then going into 2025, we'll have some more episodes to cover. This before I uprooted myself and moved to a different state, this episode was originally going to be a part of a Wynonna miniseries.
Yeah.
And so I will hopefully eventually give Justin the opportunity to put forth his Wynonna movie for me to watch. And I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I like that we're building this compendium of actors of, you know, we've seen multiple Claire Danes. We've seen multiple appearances from Wynonna. Mm-hmm. I think this was our first Sarandon appearance.
I was going back through when I was building out your little trivia game, and I think this is the first Sarandon.
Surprising.
We've had one Wynonna. I was trying to figure out a question around like Kirsten Dunst in Eternal Sunshine, because you always forget that she's in that.
Yeah.
But we have done Kirsten Dunst in Eternal Sunshine. So yeah, many connections to be had here.
Many. Great stuff. Yeah. So we'll catch everybody back in when we get back from the holidays in 2025 and maybe dive into more of these follow-up films and other stuff. Definitely going to visit Middle Earth. Maybe we'll do a full on Lord of the Rings thing. I'm like in the middle of Two Towers right now. So
that'll just be our whole 2025.
Is just talking about the movies and the books. Love it.
All of the various Lord of the Rings accoutrements.
I love it. Yeah, I do want to watch War of the Rohirrim. So,
ooh, yeah.
So cool. But yeah, so catch us on all the podcast places, wherever you get your pods casted at, on all the social media channels at Uncultured Universe, on TikTok while it lasts, Instagram, YouTube. Maybe we'll make a Blue Sky account, because that's the cool thing. Maybe we'll be over there. That's the safe space.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll catch you guys later. See you next year.
Bye.
Bye.